1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday and hope we can make your Saturday even just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on this show, please welcome from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
Julio, glad to be here. Thanks for having me. Even more than usual today, I'm feeling like a real dick. Tracy, because I'm speaking to you on my Apple Watch instead of on my phone because I'm having some technical difficulties. So I kind of feel like I'm living in the future according to the past.
Yeah, you're in the future of the 1940s.
That's correct.
Nice. So, you know, as long as you're not facing like hideously deformed villains, I guess we're okay.
No mirrors in here, so far so good.
Cool. Well, you know, I should mention as we get started here that our buddy Jeremy here just had a birthday. So happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I'm officially in my 40-something now, which I will be enjoying for the next 9 years. I'm dropping the specificity from now until I'm 50. I'm just 40-something.
Nice. Okay. Did you have a good birthday?
Yeah, it was good. Super laid back. At the time of recording this, my wife and I are going to go to Benelli's tonight to eat some good Italian food. Have you ever been to that place?
Oh, yeah. Benelli's is great.
So the owner of Benelli's actually used to work for Sony Pictures, and there's all this really cool movie memorabilia throughout the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And It's kind of cool. It's got a little bit of a Godfather vibe in there because you've got posters and stuff up. But then after we get dinner, we're going to head over and check out the 7 o'clock IMAX of The Creator, which I think you saw last night.
I did see The Creator last night. A pretty good flick from the writer and director, or from the director of Rogue One. He didn't write Rogue One, but... He directed it, and then there were some, you know, as we've had that case in a few Star Wars projects recently, there were some reshoots that Tony Gilroy, who did co-write the movie, came in to do. The movie was also co-written by Chris Weitz, who co-wrote The Creator with Gareth Edwards. So you got that little bit of a pedigree there. You got the director, the named director, and the co-writer of Rogue One coming together on this project. And like I said, it's a good flick. I think seeing it in IMAX is a good move. I did see it in IMAX also. And the visuals are great.
You can see a bit of the Rogue One and even Godzilla stuff when you watch the trailers for the movie. One of the things that's been noted about Gareth Edwards, and I think it's absolutely true, is that the guy knows how to handle scale. Like, if there's a big thing on the screen, it looks and it feels big. And I really like that about him. I feel that 2014's Godzilla is an incredibly underrated movie, and that in a lot of ways it's just so far superior to the rest of the MonsterVerse movies. But I also think I'm in the minority in that.
Well, I mean, I think you're right about the sense of scale. I think it's nice to see somebody bring out an original sci-fi concept that is not related to any other pre-existing IP. That being said, is it derivative of some other existing IPs? Yeah, there's stuff that I could point out in this movie that is, you know, oh, that comes from this and that comes from this. And, you know, there's a little of that Rogue One feel on there too. I say original IP in that, it's not, you're not getting somebody that's, you know, it's not based on a book, it's not based on a comic, it's not a sequel or a spinoff or, you know, anything like that. But is it wholly original? It's got some originality to it. But
look, as long as it wasn't actually written by artificial intelligence, I think we're all good here, though that is a conversation we're going to get into a little bit later.
No, not that I know of, not written by artificial intelligence, despite it being about artificial intelligence. I don't think there were any artificially intelligent actors used in the movie or anything like that. So some pretty recognizable faces in there, you know, John David Washington, Gemma Chan, Ken Watanabe. And, you know, good performances overall, too. I think it's a good flick. I think, you know, it's not going to be in my, well, it might end up in my year-end top 10, but like maybe towards the bottom of my year-end top 10. But it's not going to be at, you know, the top of the list or anything like that. It's knocking down Oppenheimer or anything like that. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's a tough task or like a tough milestone to come in over, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But talk to me a little bit about Halloween Fest while we got a little bit of time.
Yeah, we've got PennsCon Halloween Fest coming up next weekend. So if you're looking for something to do next weekend, that's going to be a great time for the whole family, happening on Saturday and Sunday at Splash City Adventures on Pensacola Highway. You may, if your memories are a little longer, you may still think of that place as Sam's Fun City, which it was for years
sure.
and years, but it's been Splash City Adventures for a couple of years now. And, you know, we've been doing it for 4 years now. This will be the fourth year. It's a kind of a cross between PensaCon and a Halloween party. You know, we do kind of some of the same things we do for PensaCon. We have, you know, vendors out there, and we have, celebrity guests. Our celebrity guests this year are Scott Innes, who is a past voice of Scooby-Doo and Shaggy and Scrappy-Doo and a number of other great animated characters. Real nice guy. And Alex Hyde-White, who is an actor, is in a weird position where, like, the role that he might be known for is a film that was never officially released. He was
interesting.
He was Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic, in the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie. That was made in the late 80s that was never actually released. There was a documentary about it released, but the film itself you can only see as a bootleg. But he's been in a number of other things. Probably most notably, he played the younger version of Sean Connery's Henry Jones Sr. in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and those flashback scenes with River Phoenix as Indy. Great actor, lives here locally now. He's not originally from here, but he lives here in the Pensacola area now, and we're glad to have him joining us. We've got the great artist Tom Zoller coming down to join us as well. A regular friend of PensaCon, usually is at the show every year. He's done a lot of great work with My Little Pony. The kids usually love him for that, but he's got his own creator-owned comics as well, including a very acclaimed series called Love and Capes. That's kind of a superhero rom-com.
Okay, so, interesting. And, you know, I wouldn't say only kids love them from My Little Pony, because me and the rest of the Brony community are very excited to see him there.
Well, there you go. So, you know, we have those kind of elements. We have the live entertainment on stage. We do big costume contests like we do at PensaCon. But it is all Halloween themed. We kids are able to come out, trick-or-treat bag, and trick-or-treat with all the vendors out there and get some candy. We encourage everybody to come out in costume, whether you are participating in one of the costume contests or not. And we do a big charity auction to raise money for the Ronald McDonald House Charities of Northwest Florida. So that's always a good time. We've got lots of great pieces that have been donated to us by PensaCon vendors and artists, and also from guests. You know, we have a number of signed banners from guests that have appeared at past PensaCons, things like that. And we do that raffle style. So you come out and buy however many tickets you want, put them in the bins for the things that you might want to take home. And then we draw for them. And hopefully you get something nice to take home. And the Ronald McDonald House Charities get some nice money to take home. So you know, we look forward to that. It'll be during the day on Saturday and Sunday. And you can find out more information on our social media or, of course, on PensaCon.com as well. But it'll be a good time. I hope to see everybody out there. I hope to see you out there, Jeremy.
Well, I was actually going to ask if I can cash in my hosting duties on Let's Go Pensacola. Do you think I can get, I don't know, a bag of candy or something for being such a good soldier and being here with you week after week?
Maybe if you turn up in costume and, you know, go around all the vendors. Yeah, you know, you might have to walk
all right,
on
we'll
your
see what happens.
Walk on your knees since you're now 40 something, as you said. that may be a little old. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Shoot. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy, I felt like that was an appropriate song to play going into this next segment because feels like everybody's coming back together right now. We've been in this long period of striking going on, and as of this week, I'm very happy to say that the Writers Guild of America strike against the Hollywood studios is now over. The writers went back to work this week. We're going to start seeing the late night TV programs come back starting on Sunday. Well, technically starting on Friday, if you're listening to this on the podcast, if you care about Bill Maher still having a show, which for some reason some people do, I don't, but you know, hey, knock yourself out. His show will be back Friday night, or was back last night if you're listening on the radio. But John Oliver's show comes back Sunday night, and then all of the network talk shows come back on Monday night. Really looking forward to seeing what Seth Meyers brings us. He's doing a full hour-long Closer Look segment with no guests, so that's going to be interesting and fun. But we got our writers getting back to work. We've got the studios back at the negotiating table with the actors, who are still on strike right now. But I feel like that's going to be pretty short-lived at this point. But what do you think? I mean, first of all, have you paid much attention to what's been going on with the strike and the deal that was eventually reached between the Writers Guild and the producers?
Yeah. First of all, did you ever hear an episode of Strike Force 5?
I did not. I kept meaning to check that out, but I didn't. That was, for those who don't know, it was a podcast that was done together by Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers, and John Oliver. The five big late night hosts, basically.
They came together, and I listened to an episode of it and just realized, like, thank God that these people have writers. You know, if you ever devalue what writers bring to the table, just listen to an episode of five well-regarded talk show host rambling their way through. I mean, look, it's comparable to what you and I do, but you have expectations of people like that, Julio.
Well, I mean, yes and no, because all of those people, I mean, they may not have sat down and written anything before they went into these things, but all of those people, I believe, are writers.
Yeah, that's actually a really fair point. And great writers. Also.
Yeah, I mean, they are all part of the writing staffs of their shows, if I'm not mistaken. I might be wrong about... I might be wrong about Fallon maybe not being a writer, and maybe Jimmy Kimmel, but I'm pretty sure Jimmy Kimmel writes too.
He does.
I know Colbert does. I know Seth Meyers does, and I know John Oliver does.
I feel like Meyers and Kimmel carried it, but I'm also a little biased. I like them a lot. But that said, so yes, I have been paying attention. A couple of the terms that were met would have been a yearly minimum pay increase between about 3.5% and 5% over the next 3 years, strict limitations on the use of AI by both studios and writers, which is great, a plan for residual compensation for writers who work on successful streaming shows and movies, a minimum size of 3 writers per writer room, and a minimum contract length and increased foreign residuals. They're also talking about releasing some of the metrics for different streaming services so that writers can be compensated for things comparable to residuals, which these are all excellent, excellent things.
Yeah, you know, and let's be clear on that last, releasing it privately, not releasing it to the public, unfortunately.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good clarification because I don't know that it means we'll see this stuff, but I love it. I think all of these concessions that were made are super important. What I hate is when you look at something like 3.5 to 5% over the course of X amount of years. If you just track inflation over the last couple of years, a lot of times these minimum wages over a period of time, et cetera, they just kind of come out in the wash because everything increases in prices as the years go by, but better than nothing. And I think if the WGA is happy with it, then it's something that we should all celebrate, you know?
They came in a lot better than what the producers were initially offering. They didn't get everything they asked for, but that's what negotiation is.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get everything that you ask for, but you get hopefully what is a good enough deal. And it seems like this is a good enough deal. And they're making a lot of noise about, hey, you know, this is a 3-year contract. In 3 years, we're going to try for more, you know, so that could mean we see another strike in 3 years, or it could mean that the producers start taking them seriously. My money is not on the producers taking them seriously because they have very short memories, but you know, but that's where we are now. You know, we still, like I said, we still have the Actors Guild, Screen Actors Guild strike going on, but I think they had a lot of the same demands, and the precedent seems to be with the three guilds, although the Directors Guild is always in the weakest bargaining position for these things. It seems to be that whatever one gets, the rest of them get. So I think that the Screen Actors wanted a lot of the same things. There are a few things that are a little different that, you know, don't necessarily apply to writers, that apply to actors. But I feel like at this point, I think we're going to have a very swift conclusion to the actors' strike. They are already back at the tables. They're getting back together again on Monday. I feel like by the end of next week, we're going to see the actors back at work too.
That's fantastic. And I mean, we have, even over just such a short amount of time, really felt the impact of what it means to not have the Hollywood machine running as it has, you know, for so long. And I, for one, am happy that these late night shows are kind of coming back, because it fills a void for me. It fills a niche that is unlike any other entertainment. And I know there's so much content out there, but to be able to see actors and filmmakers and directors sit down with talk show hosts and actually promote their movies, it just kind of reignites people's interest in a lot of these projects. Like, there have been so many things that have come out over the last couple of months that have just completely flown under the radar because people weren't able to get out and actively promote it. So it'll be good to see people be able to come back out and be passionate about the projects that they've put so much blood, sweat, and tears into.
Well, and I think that that is part of the reason that the producers finally came back to the table. They had too many multi-million dollar movies coming out and underperforming because nobody was out there promoting them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's when you get down to it, kind of the first thing. I mean, when a movie like Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny or Mission Impossible, whatever the last chapter of Mission Impossible was called, I can't even remember now. You know, when those movies are underperforming, and it's not really from them not being good movies.
No, you know, the two you named were pretty good. Mission Impossible is great.
Yeah. So you know, I think that, and, you know, above and beyond what you just mentioned too, in terms of just the whole overall thing, what it was doing to the economy and what it was doing to all these below the line workers who were not able to work because of the guilds being on strike.
Yeah, good point.
You know, the personal impact there, it's a lot beyond just those of us, you know, sitting at home wanting to be entertained by, you know, the product that comes out of those studios and you know, out of Hollywood in general. And it's funny because I don't think we have yet felt that side of it. We felt it a little bit in that the, you know, the late night shows weren't on, that sort of thing. But the gaps that we're going to get in TV and movie production, we won't really feel until next year.
Yeah,
we'll feel it a little on the TV side into the fall because all the fall shows will be late coming back. But you know, we just had, you know, just this week, you know, we've had Gen V, the new Boys spinoff, start up. We've had, you know, there's new series coming out. The Continental, the John Wick spinoff series that's come to Peacock, that's out there. So there's stuff that has been in the pipeline that we're now seeing, but the stuff that would have been the next in the pipeline is where we're going to have the gap. So, you know, coming into, we had a few movies that were delayed already that were supposed to come out late this year that they delayed so that the actors would be able to be out there promoting them. You know, Dune Part 2 is probably the biggest one. And, you know, so we're going to play catch up now, and there's going to be a little bit of gaps in there, kind of like there was after COVID. But, you know, it's good to see that happen. Hope to see the actors back at work by the end of the week. Of course, the actors have also this week struck against the video game industry, and that strike is separate and looks like it may be going on for a while. So We'll see how that goes as well. But with this lifting, we have seen a little bit of industry news coming out that we want to make sure we note too. First of all, our dear friend James Gunn, I wish he was our dear friend anyway, who is in charge of the new DC studios and will be handling the direction of DC films and DC entertainment products after this last film that's coming out in December, Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, which we also just got a trailer on, by the way, has come out and said some stuff we kind of already knew, to be fair, but has confirmed anyway that three more actors that will be continuing from the past DC films and TV projects that will continue in their roles.
I didn't hear this.
Yeah, he on Threads, he did kind of a Q&A session, and he did during that session state that Viola Davis is continuing as Amanda Waller.
Great pick.
Not a big surprise there. John Cena is continuing as Peacemaker.
Best pick.
Again, not a big surprise. And then I think a lot of people have been on the track of, oh, yeah, well, he's just bringing back all of his people. And yeah, both of them were in his movies, although he did not cast Viola Davis. That was David Ayer.
Good casting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, fantastic casting, and I'm glad she's continuing. But last but not least, Zola Maragueña is coming back as Blue Beetle. Even though the movie did underperform, they like him in the role. They like the character. And there may not be another Blue Beetle movie immediately in the offering, but that character will continue to show up in DC films.
Yeah, those are good picks. I didn't see Blue Beetle. How do you feel about him being, like, if you could pick three of the people that Gunn was going to use moving forward, would he have been on that list? And even if not, are you confident that going forward he's good casting for that character?
I am, and let's talk a little bit more about that when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Who'd have thought they'd lead ya?
Back here where we need ya. We got him on the spot. Welcome back.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, and we're celebrating the end of the writer's strike and welcoming the writers back to work. Looking forward to hopefully a very swift resolution to the Screen Actors Guild strike. And with all of that comes getting back into some industry news, and they're actually being industry news again, which is nice. And we were talking about before the break about how James Gunn, who is in charge of DC films and will be in charge of the all the DC filmed and non-comics, let's put it that way, non-comics entertainment. He's not going to be running the comics, but he'll be running the TV side, the movie side, the animation side, the video game side, along with Peter Safran. It's a joint effort. And we mentioned that this week on Threads, he confirmed that Viola Davis is continuing in her role as Amanda Waller from the previous DCEU films, that John Cena is continuing in his role as Peacemaker from the previous DCEU films and television series. And I guess Viola Davis was in that series too, now that I think about it. She had a few cameos in that series. And that Zola Maragueña, who just recently debuted and still in theaters in Blue Beetle, will be continuing as that character. Whether we get another Blue Beetle film or not is kind of up in the air, because the film did not do that great at the box office. But they like the actor in the role. They like the character. So we know the character is going to pop up somewhere with Zola Maragueña in the role. I think there's been an assumption that a lot of Guns' other regulars or people who have shown up in Guns' The Suicide Squad film or the Peacemaker series will continue. I know we have confirmation that in the Creature Commandos series that is coming up, the character Weasel, who was in The Suicide Squad, is going to continue with Sean Gunn, James's brother, continuing to voice him. Sean's also going to get to voice another character in that series as well. I believe we have confirmed that our friend Steve Agee is returning in his role as John Economos, who he played in The Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, and he's going to be in that series as well. I think it's widely assumed that James's wife, Jennifer, is going to continue as Amelia Harcourt. And I think there's a general assumption that the characters from The Suicide Squad and Peacemaker may continue. And then there's been some question marks elsewhere. There's been some question marks about Aquaman, about why is his name gone out of my head right now?
Momoa?
Yeah, Jason Momoa. Thank you. About whether Jason Momoa is going to continue as Aquaman or whether maybe he's going to play a different character, because they have said that he is definitely going to continue being in DC movies, but there's been a lot of buzz about him possibly not playing Aquaman anymore and instead playing Lobo, which a lot of people think would be a lot better casting. I don't know. I'm kind of torn on that subject. But the question you asked me before the break there, Jeremy, is if there were three actors that I could pick to continue in their roles, who would I choose to continue in their roles? And I'm going to kind of go with stuff that hasn't been officially announced yet. So there may be some things in here that you may be assuming are going to happen, and they may be logical assumptions, but I'm going to not assume. I'm going to just say, okay, these are the ones that we haven't heard anything that I would like to see continue. First and foremost,
okay,
I think it's the most obvious one on the list. Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn. Lady Gaga may do a wonderful job in this Todd Phillips insanity thing that they're doing, side project that's separate from the DCU. That's fine. And Kaley Cuoco absolutely shines as Harley Quinn on the animated series, and I want that animated series to continue as well. But I think Margot owns that role. And Margot is now in a position where she can do literally anything she wants to do. I think if she wants to play Harley Quinn, she's going to be Harley Quinn.
And I'm with you so far. Love
and
it.
I think she wants to keep playing the character, so we'll see. But that would be my first pick. My second pick is going to be Zachary Levi as Shazam. I think that he's, I know the second movie was kind of lukewarmly received. I liked it, but I think that he's a lot of fun in that role, and I'd really like to see him continue to play that character. Whether it makes sense to recast the younger version, that may be debatable, because certainly Asher Angel is getting a little older now. I think he's...
Yeah, they're like the same age eventually.
but I really like Zach Levi in that role, and I wouldn't mind seeing him continue that. For my third one...
That's how time works, isn't it?
What's that?
That's how time works, isn't it? The young person, they keep aging, but the old person stays the same age, and they eventually catch up and become the same age?
Only if you're Matthew McConaughey.
Okay. All right.
All right. yeah, and then for my third one,
it's a tough one on the spot. I don't know that I necessarily agree that Zachary Levi is one of the three that I would keep.
Well,
because
who would you...
I do think Amanda Waller's a really good pick, and we both love her and John Cena.
Well, yeah, I'm putting them aside. We know they're coming back.
Understood.
Yeah. So give me yours.
Margot Robbie, absolutely.
So who would you take?
Okay, putting them, it is tricky. I'm going to go with the longest standing fan casting, and understanding that things are dramatically different with the world that is being set up. But I think Henry Cavill is a perfect Superman. Okay. I do not envy the person that they try to put in his shoes, because I just thought he was so dang good. And then Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne / Batman was also incredibly inspired casting. I think you can level a lot of criticisms against Zack Snyder, but I don't think you can say that his casting of the Justice League wasn't pretty spot on.
You just told me who my third is right there. You just reminded me that I can't believe I forgot this. But my third is Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman.
Excellent pick. Yes. Okay. So I think, I'm surprised by your Shazam. It's out of pocket, but that's the fun of this game. It's not what I would have thought about. And obviously my ideas of Batman and Superman, that's not what the direction that we're going with the DCEU at this point. But I just... it's going to be big shoes to fill. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I just think Gal Gadot has been a perfect Wonder Woman, and she needs to
absolutely
stay. You can level whatever criticisms you like at Wonder Woman 1984, and I do think it's a flawed film, but I don't think that those criticisms fall at Gal Gadot's feet. I think she has been nothing but perfect. I think seeing her in the cameos in Shazam 2 and in The Flash, she was just continued to be perfect in the role. I definitely want her to continue.
In fact,
I might backtrack and make her my number one pick.
Do you like Zolo moving forward as Blue Beetle? He's going to be a good fit.
I think he was great in the role, and I really hope that they get to continue the storyline that was teased at the end of that film with going back and finding the previous Blue Beetle. And I would, if I can add one more little casting that I'd like to see continue there. We heard the voice of the second Blue Beetle at the end of the movie there, and I think it was an uncredited cameo, but the guy that did that voice, man, do I want to see him play the Ted Kord Blue Beetle, and that's Jason Sudeikis.
Unfortunately, that pick is invalidated. You only had three. Let's move along.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move away from the DC universe for a moment before we run out of time in this segment. Because there was a little bit of Marvel news that came out at the end of this, just came out today, in fact, that I wanted to mention as well. And that is, with the writers getting back to work, our good friend who runs the entire Marvel Universe, Kevin, and I don't mean the AI in the She-Hulk series, but know who I mean, Kevin Feige, has announced that they are starting to take writers' pitches on directions for the future projects. The big news here is that they are taking writer pitches for an X-Men movie.
Woo!
And you know, we knew this was coming eventually. They've been teasing the X-Men in the Marvel universe, including in She-Hulk, where they just outright said it, where she flat out breaks the fourth wall and looks at the camera and says, "When are we getting the X-Men?" You know, we had the little bit where we know Kamala Khan is a mutant. So we know a Deadpool 3 is coming. But we are getting an X-Men movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and we don't have a date yet. We don't have any details. They're just starting to look at hiring a writer. And I don't think we're going to get any announcements anytime real soon, but I'm excited about that.
Are Bryan Singer and Brett Ratner busy?
Yes.
All right.
Bryan Singer is busy never getting hired for anything ever again.
And, probably rightfully so.
Yeah. And Brett Ratner is... maybe serving lattes at a Starbucks. I don't know. I'm excited for this. I'm a big X-Men fan. I'm looking forward to seeing what they can do.
Yeah.
And maybe kind of righting the ship from some of the wrongs from the Fox X-Men films. We shall see. But, just look forward to seeing what they do. And I'm really looking forward to Deadpool 3 also. I know that's already been in production and will be going back into production, but very much looking forward to seeing that and seeing Hugh Jackman as Wolverine just one last time, or maybe not the last time. We remains to be seen, but we got to take a break. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And Jeremy just can't go wrong with Oiled Up Sax Guy.
If I may.
You may.
And here, this is the TMI segment of Let's Go Pensacola. Last year, over the summer, I was able to go and see the Joe Bob Jamboree. It was a coming together of horror fans from all over the country, from all over the world, probably. Tim Capello, sexy saxophone guy from Lost Boys, was the musical guest. He did a performance of I Still Believe, and it made me feel like I was on the boardwalk in Santa Carla back in 1987. I wept, dude. I wept harder than Kevin Smith watching the trailer for The Force Awakens when that came out a couple years ago. I love that song, Julio. Sorry for making you edit that.
That's okay. There's one thing I never could stand about living in Santa Carla. It's all the damn vampires.
That's right. Yeah. I get real enthusiastic about that movie, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I play that not to talk about The Lost Boys, however, but I play that because Tim Capello had a great cameo at the end of season 3 of the song that the show that we're going to talk about now, Reservation Dogs.
Awesome.
Yeah. And I just felt like that song feels like a good summation to this series, which has just ended its run on FX on Hulu. So I think it's a series that I really felt like could have gone on for forever, as far as I was concerned, you know, in terms of just being really well written and really great slice of life and just really loving these characters. But I also understand why the creators have decided to end this show where they've ended it. Sterling Harjo.
How many shows decide to go out on top? I mean, like, I really respect the choice. Like you said, I feel like they could have gone further, but the fact that they're going to go out on this three-season trilogy of seasons of Reservation Dogs and just not even a miss within the entire series is just such a cool accomplishment. And it's something you and I have been just championing since the very beginning. And what I like about three seasons is, like, you and I can suggest this to somebody and we don't have to tell them that it's 20 seasons long and make it feel like I'll never be able to watch this.
No, it wraps up in 30 episodes. It's real tight. Episodes are about a half hour each, so they're not super long either. So you could get through this if you chose to binge it, you could get through the whole thing in probably a weekend. Probably pretty easy.
Yeah.
I'd say very easily. But it is at its heart a coming of age series, and when you're doing a coming of age series, eventually your actors are going to age out of coming of age.
They're going to have come of age. That's a good point.
And that certainly is the case. I mean, when you think about the fact that Devery Jacobs, who plays Laura Dannon, was really already in her late 20s when she was cast in this. She is at like 30 or 31 now.
Unbelievable aging on that woman, by the way.
Yeah, no, she's an amazing looking woman.
She looks like a 20-year-old.
Yeah. So also the way these characters have been written is they are coming of age. They are, you know, they are learning things and becoming the adults that they're going to be. So I do think it makes sense to end here. While I would love to maybe revisit these characters at some point in the future, I do think it makes sense to end it where it is now. I think there are a lot of series that have been out there that have started with high school age characters that maybe went on longer than they should have. Just because once you get these characters into college and they start becoming adults, it changes something.
It loses the thing that brought us in the first place. So full disclosure for the listeners, I actually haven't finished the series yet. I haven't seen this finale of it, but I do have a question for you, Julio.
Okay.
Do you feel like it has a conclusive ending, or do you feel like it's something that, because of the nature, slice of life kind of nature of the show, that it could, in theory, just pick back up some other time and not feel like the story was over?
I'd say both. I think that this series became so much about the community, and that's something that's really stressed in the final episode. I think that we could dip back into this community at some point in the future when the characters are a little older and see how things are going with them. I think that would be fine. That said, I think they do come to enough of a conclusion that you have a good idea of where things are going for them. And if they stay on track, you know, kind of a, you know, Sterling Harjo said in an interview I read with him this week, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I'm honestly not sure I am.
Is that Bear?
No, that the creator of the series.
Okay. Excuse me.
Yeah. Kind of a central theme of this series is that everything's going to be okay.
And yeah. It's so good.
Yeah. I really like the good place where they leave all these characters in. They have grown, they have matured, and there's nothing that happens in the last two episodes that I think is going to be terribly shocking to anybody that's following the series. I think it's just a good, you know, like I said, they stress community in the last episode, and community is what that last episode is all about. And it just really works. And we get a good moment with our original four that we followed through this whole series, and we get a glimpse of where they're going. But it's not just about them either. It's about their place in that community.
And all of the extra kind of side characters, peripheral characters, are so well drawn and so well developed as well. I don't know. I ask myself, and I'd like to kind of ask you the question as well. If you were going to give Reservation Dogs an Emmy, just to kind of acknowledge its, you know, just being such a great show, where would you find to be able to award them?
I mean, I think it's been presented as a comedy, and I think that I think that's probably the category I'd put it in. I also think that's probably a little less competitive awards wise than drama is.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
So I think it's got some possibility in that category. I'm going to be very, very mad if this series ends with no recognition.
It's stiff competition out there, so I get it. But yeah, I do feel like it's so good.
Well, but at this point, it hasn't even been nominated. You know, it needs to at least get some nominations. And I'm further going to be mad because we did have this great guest appearance in the next to last episode. Again, I don't think it's shocking to anybody that's been watching the series to know that they've been leading up to a Laura Dannon meeting her father, which she does in the next to last episode. She's played by an actor we all know very well, Ethan Hawke.
What?
Yeah, we've known that her father was white. So Ethan Hawke shows up and plays her father. The only thing that would be worse than Reservation Dogs never winning an Emmy is if the only Emmy it ever gets is that Ethan Hawke wins one for guest actor. Not because Ethan Hawke doesn't deserve it. He's great in the role. He's fantastic. And he definitely deserves a nomination and even a win. But if the only award they ever give to this series is to a famous white actor,
not a chance.
They need to burn the whole Academy down.
Not a chance. That's a really good point. Ethan Hawke is great. I would say top 20 for me of best actors of all time.
Yeah,
he's slept on.
He's fantastic in this part. It's a small part, but the episode kind of plays a lot like the Before trilogy of movies that he starred in.
Yeah,
you know, the Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, etc. It kind of plays like a father-daughter version of that, but where the father and daughter have, you know, spent their lives apart, basically.
I want to check this out.
So yeah, it was a cool episode. He was a great choice, and would I like to see him win for it? Yeah, but not without some other wins for the series too.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I mean, Devery Jacobs certainly deserves to be recognized. All of the actors deserve to be recognized. There's some other great guest actors in the series that deserve to be recognized, including the great Graham Greene, who has just finally showed up in this season. We've had a lot of the great Native American actors of old show up in this series and finally get to play characters that befit their stature. So that's been a lot of fun. I just really hope to see everybody that was involved with this show go on to do really interesting and great things. You know, Devery Jacobs has been doing a lot of writing on the show as well, and I would like to see her get something where she's going to get to write and star in something. I think she's definitely ready for that. And then we know that one of the actors who's recurred on this show, Lily Gladstone, is appearing in the new Martin Scorsese movie. And actually, Lily Gladstone did show up in this final episode again, too, so it was good to see her. But she's going to be in the new Martin Scorsese movie, Killers of the Flower Moon. I keep getting that title wrong, but Killers of the Flower Moon is coming out in just a couple weeks. Widely touted as a big Oscar contender this year, including a lot of talk about a nomination for her. So, you know, I just hope to see everybody go on and this really just continue to build from this project. We are out of time. We are back next week we are off next week for FSU football, but we will be back after that. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.